benefits of other people without the body odor and the eye contact. Levi kicked her chair. He could reach it without stretching.
Kath, read me your fan fiction. I want to know what happens next.
She opened her computer slowly, as if she were still thinking about it, as if there were any way she was going to say no. Levi wanted to know what happened next. That question was Kath's Achilles heel. She opened the story she'd been reading to him. It was something she'd written last year for a Christmas fic festival, Deck the Halls with Baz and Simon. Kath's fic had won 2 awards, Tastes Like Canon and Best in Snow.
"Where did we leave off?" she said, mostly to herself.
Baz's teeth were bared, and his face was filled with disgust and decision.
Kath found the spot in the story.
"Wow," she said. "Good memory."
Levi was smiling. He kicked her chair again.
"Okay," she said. "So they're in the boat, and Simon is leaning over, looking at the tiles on the moat wall."
Levi closed his eyes. Kath cleared her throat. When he looked back, Baz had stepped toward him in the punt. He was curled above Simon, washed blue by his own conjured fire, his teeth bared and his face thick with decision and disgust. Baz held the pole just over Simon's face, and before Simon could reach his wand or whisper a spell, Baz was driving the pole forward over Simon's shoulder. The boat shook, and there was a gurgling howl, a frenzied splash from the water. Baz raised the pole and drove it down again, his face as cold and cruel as Simon had ever seen it. His wide lips were shining, and he was practically growling. Simon held himself still while the boat rocked. When Baz stepped back again, Simon slowly sat up.
"Did you kill it?" he asked quietly.
"No," Baz said. "I should have. It should know better than to bother the boats. And you should know better than to lean into the moat." "Why are there merwolves in the moat anyway?" Simon flushed. "This is a school. A school run by a madman, something I've been trying to explain to you for 6 years.
"Don't talk that way about the mage."
"Where's your mage now, Simon?" Baz asked softly, looking up at the old fortress. He looked tired again, his face blue and shadowed in the moonlight, his eyes practically ringed in black. "And what are you looking for, anyway?" he asked waspishly, rubbing his eyes. "Maybe if you told me, I could help you find it, and then we could both go inside and avoid death by drowning, freezing, or torn jugular."
"It's..." Simon weighed the risks. Usually, when Simon was this far along on a quest, Baz had already sniffed out his purpose and was setting a trap to foil him. But this time, Simon hadn't told anyone what he was doing, not even Agatha, not even Penelope. The anonymous letter had told Simon to seek out help. It said that the mission was too dangerous to carry out on his own, and that's exactly why Simon hadn't wanted to involve his friends. But putting Baz at risk, well, that wasn't so distasteful.
"It's dangerous," Simon said sternly.
"Oh, I'm sure. Danger is your middle name, etc. Simon Oliver Danger Snow."
"How do you know my middle name?" Simon asked warily.
"Great Crimea, what part of 6 years is lost on you? I know which shoe you put on first. I know that your shampoo smells like apples. My mind is fairly bursting with worthless Simon Snow trivia. Don't you know mine?"
"Your what?"
"My middle name," Baz said.
Morgan's tooth, he was stroppy.
It's Basilton, right?"
"Quite right, you great thumping idiot."
"That was a trick question."
Simon turned back to the mosaic.
"What are you looking for?" Baz demanded again, snarling through his teeth like an animal. This was something Simon had learned about Baz in 6 years.
He could turn from peevish to dangerous in half a heartbeat. But Simon still hadn't learned not to rise to the bait. "Rabbits," he blurted out. "I'm looking for rabbits."
"Rabbits?" Baz looked confused, caught mid-snarl.
"Six white hares."
"Why?"
"I don't know," Simon shouted. "I just am. I got a letter. There are six white hares on school grounds, and they lead to something."
"To what?"
"I don't know. Something dangerous."
"And I don't suppose," Baz said, leaning against the pole, resting his forehead on the wood, "that you know who sent it."
"No."
"It could be a trap."
"There's only one way to find out."
Simon wished he could stand and face Baz without tipping the boat. He hated the way Baz was talking down to him.
"You really think that," Baz scoffed, "don't you? You really think that the only way to sort out whether something is dangerous is to barrel right into it?"
"What else would you suggest?"
"You could ask your precious mage, for starters. You could run it past your swatty friend. Her brain is so enormous, it pushes her ears out like a monkey's. Maybe she could shed some light."
Simon yanked on Baz's cloak and made him lose his balance.
"Don't talk about Penelope like that."
The punt wobbled, and Baz recovered his cool stance.
"Have you talked to her? Have you talked to anyone?"
"No," Simon said.
"Six hares, is it?"
"Yes."
"How many have you found so far?"
"Four."
"So, you've got the one in the cathedral, and the one on the drawbridge."
"You know about the hare on the drawbridge?" Simon sat back, startled.
"That took me 3 weeks to find."
"That doesn't surprise me," Baz said. "You're not very observant. Do you even know my first name?"
He started pushing them through the water again, pushing them toward the dock, Simon hoped.
It begins with a T.
"It's Tyrannus," Baz said.
"Honestly. So, the cathedral, the drawbridge, and the nursery."
Simon clambered to his feet, pulling himself up by Baz's cloak. The punt bobbed.
"The nursery?"
Baz lowered an eyebrow.
"Of course."
This close, Simon could see the purple bruises under Baz's eyes, the web of dark blood vessels in his eyelids.
"Show me."
Baz shrugged, practically shuddered away from Simon and out of the boat. Simon jerked forward and grabbed a post on the dock to keep the boat from floating away.
"Come on," Baz said.
Kath realized that she'd started doing Simon and Baz's voices, at least doing the version of their voices that she heard in her head. She glanced over at Levi to see if he'd noticed. He was holding his cup with both hands against his chest and resting his chin on top, like it was keeping him warm. His eyes were open but unfocused. He looked like a little kid watching TV. Kath turned back to her computer before he caught her watching him. It took longer to put the boat away than it had to get it out, and by the time it was tied up, Simon's hands were wet and freezing. They hurried back into the fortress, side by side, both of them pushing their fists into their pockets. Baz was taller, but their strides matched exactly. Simon wondered whether they'd ever walked like this before. In 6 years, 6 years of always walking in the same direction, had they ever once fallen into step?
"Here," Baz said, catching Simon's arm and stopping at a closed door.
Simon would have walked right past this door. He must have 1,000 times. It was on the main floor, near the professor's offices. Baz tried the handle. It was locked. He pulled his wand out of his pocket and started murmuring. The door came open suddenly, almost as if the knob were reaching for Baz's pale hand.
"How did you do that?" Simon asked.
Baz just sneered and strode forward. Simon followed. The room was dark, but he could see that it was a place for children. There were toys and pillows and train tracks that wound around the room in every direction. "What is this place?"
"It's the nursery," Baz said in a hushed voice, as if children might be sleeping in the room right now.
"Why does Watford need a nursery?"
"It doesn't," Baz said. "Not anymore. It's too dangerous here now for children, but this used to be the place where the faculty brought their children while they worked, and other magical children could come too if they wanted to get an early start on their development."
"Did you come here?"
"Yes, from the time I was born."
"Your parents must have thought you needed a lot of extra help."
"My mother was the headmaster, you idiot."
Simon turned to look at Baz, but he couldn't quite see the other boy's face in the dark.
"I didn't know that."
He could hear Baz roll his eyes. "Shocking."
"But I've met your mother."
"You've met my stepmother," Baz said. He stood very still. Simon matched his stillness.
"The last headmaster," he said, watching Baz's profile. "Before the mage came. The one who was killed by vampires."
Baz's head fell forward like it was weighted with stones.
"Come on, the hair is this way."
The next room was wide and round. Cribs lined the walls on each side, with small, low futons placed in a circle in the middle. At the far end was a huge fireplace, half as tall as the high, curved ceiling. Baz whispered into his hand and sent a ball of fire blazing through the grate. He whispered again, twisting his hand in the air, and the blue flames turned orange and hot. The room came to life a bit around them. Baz walked toward the fireplace, holding his hands up to the heat. Simon followed.
"There it is," Baz said.
"Where?"
Simon looked into the fire.
"Above you."
Simon looked up, then turned back to face the room. On the ceiling above him was a richly painted mural of the night sky. The sky was deep blue and dominated by the moon. A white rabbit curled tightly in on itself, eyes pressed closed, fat and full and fast asleep.
Simon walked out into the middle of the room, his chin raised high.
"The fifth hair," he whispered.
"The moon rabbit."
"Now what?" Baz asked, just behind him.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, now what?"
"I don't know," Simon said.
"Well, what did you do when you found the others?"
"Nothing. I just found them. The letter just said to find them."
Baz brought his hands to his face and growled, dropping into a frustrated heap on the floor.
"Is this how you and your dream team normally operate? It's no wonder it's always so easy to get in your way."
"But it's not so easy to stop us, I've noticed."
"Oh, shut up," Baz said, his face hidden in his knees.
"Just no more. No more of your drippy voice until you've got something worth saying. It's like a drill you're cranking between my eyes."
Simon sat down on the floor near Baz, near the fire, looking up at the sleeping rabbit. When his neck started to cramp, he leaned back on the rug.
"I slept in a room like this," Simon said. "In the orphanage. Nowhere near this nice. There is no fireplace. No moon rabbit. But we all slept together like this, in one room."
"Crowley, Snow. Was that when you joined the cast of Annie?"
"There are still places like that. Orphanages. You wouldn't know."
"Quite right," Baz said. "My mother didn't choose to leave me."
"If your family is so grand, why are you celebrating Christmas with me?"
"I wouldn't call this a celebration."
Simon focused again on the rabbit. Maybe there was something hidden in it. Maybe if he squinted, or if he looked at it in a mirror. Agatha had a magic mirror. It would tell you if something was amiss, like if you had spinach in your teeth or something hanging from your nose. When Simon looked at it, it always asked him who he was kidding.
"It's just jealous," Agatha would say. "It thinks I give you too much attention." It was my choice, Baz said, breaking the silence. I didn't want to go home for Christmas. He leaned back onto the floor, an arm's length from Simon. When Simon glanced over, Baz was staring up at the painted stars.
Were you here? Simon asked, watching the light from the fire play across Baz's strong features.
His nose was all wrong, Simon had always thought. It started too high, with a soft bump between Baz's eyebrows. If Simon looked at Baz's face for too long, he always wanted to reach up and tug his nose down. Not that that would work. It was just a feeling.
Was I here when? Baz asked.
When they attacked your mother?
They attacked the nursery, Baz said, as if he were explaining it to the moon. Vampires can't have children, you know. They have to turn them.
They thought if they turned magical children, they'd be twice as dangerous.
They would be, Simon thought, his stomach flopping fearfully. Vampires were already nearly invulnerable. A vampire who could do magic.
My mother came to protect us.
To protect you, Simon said.
She threw fire at the vampires, Baz said.
They went up like flash paper.
How did she die?
There were just too many of them. He was still talking to the sky, but his eyes were closed.
Did the vampires turn any of the children?
Yes. It was like a puff of smoke escaping from Baz's lips. Simon didn't know what to say. He thought it might be worse, in a way, to have had a mother, a powerful, loving mother, and then to lose her, than to grow up like Simon had, with nothing. He knew what happened next in Baz's story. After the headmaster, Baz's mother, was killed, the mage took over. The school changed. It had to. They weren't just students now. They were warriors. Of course the nursery had closed. When you came to Watford, you left your childhood behind. All right for Simon. He had nothing to lose. But for Baz. He lost his mother, Simon thought. And he got me instead. In a hiccup of tenderness, or perhaps pity, Simon reached for Baz's hand, fully expecting Baz to yank his arm from its socket. But Baz's hand was cold and limp. When Simon looked closer, he realized that the other boy was asleep. The door flew open then, and for once, Kath thought, Reagan's timing was perfect. Kath closed her laptop to let Levi know she was done reading.
Hey, Reagan said.
Oh, hey, Christmas cups. Did you bring me a gingerbread latte?
Kath looked down guiltily at her cup.
I brought you an eggnog latte, Levi said, holding it out. And I've been keeping it warm in my mouth.
Eggnog? Reagan wrinkled her nose, but she took it.
What are you doing here so early?
I thought we could study before the party, Levi said.
Jacob Have I Loved? He nodded.
You're reading Jacob Have I Loved? Kath asked. That's a kid's book.
Young adult literature, he said. It's a great class.
Reagan was shoving clothes in her bag.
I'm taking a shower at your place, she said. I'm so goddamn sick of public showers.
Levi scooted forward on Kath's bed and leaned an elbow on her desk.
So, is that how Baz became a vampire, when the nursery was attacked?
Kath wished he wouldn't talk about this in front of Reagan.
You mean for real?
I mean in the books.
There is no nursery in the books, Kath said.
But in your version, that's how it happens.
Just in this story. Every story is a little different.
And other people have their versions, too?
Oh, yeah, she said. There are all these fans, and we're all doing something different.
Are you the only one who writes about Baz and Simon falling in love?
Kath laughed.
No. The entire internet writes about Baz and Simon. If you go to Google and type in Baz and Simon, the first search it suggests is Baz and Simon in love. How many people do this? Write Simon slash Baz, or write Simon Snow fanfiction?
Write fanfiction.
God, I don't know. Thousands and thousands.
So, if you didn't want the books to be over, you could just keep reading Simon Snow stories forever online.
Exactly, Kath said earnestly. She'd thought Levi must be judging her, but he got it. If you fall in love with the world of mages, you can just keep on living there.
I wouldn't call that living, Reagan said.
It was a metaphor, Levi said gently.
I'm ready, Reagan said. Are you coming, Kath?
Kath smiled tightly and shook her head.
Are you sure?
Levi asked, lifting himself off her bed.
We could come back for you later.
Nah, that's okay. See you tomorrow. As soon as they left, Kath headed down to eat dinner by herself.
Maybe I'm not supposed to have a wand. Maybe I'm supposed to have a ring like you. Or a wrist thingy like mangy old Elspeth. Oh, Simon, Penelope frowned. You shouldn't call her that. She can't help her fur. Her father was the Witch King of Canis. No, I know. It's easier for the rest of us, she said, soothing. Magicians' instruments stay in families. They're passed from generation to generation. Right, he said. Just like magic. It doesn't make sense, Penelope. My parents must have been magicians. He'd tried to talk to her about this before, and that time it had made her look just as sad. Simon, they couldn't have been. Magicians would never abandon their own child. Never. Magic is too precious. Simon looked away from her and flicked his wand again. It felt like something dead in his hands. I think Elspeth's fur is pretty, Penelope said. She looks soft. He shoved the wand into his pocket and stood up. You just want a puppy. From Chapter 21, Simon Snow and the Third Gate. Copyright 2004 by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 14. Their dad came to pick them up the day before Thanksgiving. When he pulled up in front of Pound Hall, Wren and Courtney were already sitting in the back of the Honda. Wren and Kath usually sat in the back seat together. Their dad would complain that he felt like a cab driver, and they'd say, "No, limo driver. Home, James."
"Wow, look at this," he said when Kath sat in the front seat next to him. "Company."
She tried to smile. Courtney and Wren were talking in the back seat, but with the radio up, Kath couldn't hear them. Once they were on the interstate, she leaned over to her dad. "How's Gravioli?" she asked.
"What?"
He turned down the radio. "Dad," Wren said, "that's our jam."
"Sorry," he said, shifting the volume to the back seat. "What's that?"
he asked Kath. "Gravioli," she said.
"Oh," he made a face. "To hell with gravioli. Did you know that it's actually canned ravioli soaked in slimy brown gravy?"
"That sounds disgusting," Kath said.
"It's revolting," he said. "It's like dog food for people. Maybe that's what we should have pitched. Do you secretly want to eat dog food? Does the smell of it make your mouth water?"
Kath joined in her best announcer's voice. "Is the only thing keeping you from eating dog food the fear that your neighbors will notice all the cans and realize that you don't have a dog?"
"Gravioli," her dad said, rounding out every vowel sound. "It's dog food for people."
"You didn't get the business," Kath said. "I'm sorry." He shook his head for a little too long.
"We did get it. Sometimes getting it is infinitely worse than not getting it. It was a shootout, 6 agencies. They picked us, then they rejected every good idea we had. And then, out of desperation, Kelly says in a client meeting, 'Maybe there's a bear who comes out of hibernation really hungry, and all it can say is grr.' And then the bear gets a big bowl of delicious gravioli, and it turns into a human being.
And the client just loved the idea. Just fucking flipped. Started shouting, "That's it!"
Kath glanced back to see if Courtney was listening. Their dad only cursed when he was talking about work, and sometimes when he was manic. He said that ad agencies were worse than submarines, all cussing and claustrophobia.
"So now we're doing cartoon bears and gravioli," he said.
"That sounds terrible."
"It's torture. We're doing 4 TV spots. 4 different bears turn into 4 different people. 4, so we can cover our races. And then fucking Kelly asks if we should make the Asian guy a panda bear. And he was serious. Not only is that racist, panda bears don't hibernate."
Kath giggled.
"That's what I have to say to my boss. It's an interesting idea, Kelly, but panda bears don't hibernate." "And do you know what he says?"
Kath laughed. "Uh-uh. Tell me."
"Don't be so literal, Arthur."
"No."
"Yes,"
her dad laughed, shaking his head again, too fast, too long.
"Working on this client is like making my brain dig its own grave."
"Its own gravioli," Kath said. He laughed again.
"It's all right," he said, tapping the steering wheel. "It's money. Just money."
She knew that wasn't true. It was never about the money with him. It was about the work. It was about coming up with the perfect idea, the most elegant solution. Her dad didn't really care what he was selling, tampons or tractors or dog food for people. He just wanted to find the perfect puzzle piece idea that would be beautiful and right. But when he found that idea, it almost always got killed. Either the client rejected it, or his boss rejected it, or changed it. And then it was like someone had tapped straight into her dad's heart and was draining the sap from his soul. After they dropped Courtney off in West O, Wren slid forward in her seat and turned down the radio.
"Seatbelt," their dad said.
She sat back and buckled up again. "Is Grandma coming over tomorrow?"
"No," he said. "She went to stay in Chicago with Aunt Lynn for a month. She wants to spend the holidays with the kids."
"We're kids," Wren said.
"Not anymore. You're sophisticated young women. Nobody wants to watch you unwrap gift cards. Hey, what time is your mom coming to get you?"
Kath turned sharply to look at her sister. Wren was already watching Kath. "Noon," she said guardedly. "They're having lunch at 1.
"So we'll eat at 6? 7? Will you save some room?"
"She's coming to get you?" Kath asked. "She's coming to our house?" Their dad looked strangely at Kath, then into the mirror at Wren.
"I thought you guys were going to talk about this."
Wren rolled her eyes and looked out the window. "I knew she'd just freak out." "I'm not freaking out," Kath said, feeling her eyes start to sting. "And if I am freaking out, it's because you're not telling me things." "It's not a big deal," Wren said. "I've talked to Mom a few times on the phone, and I'm going to hang out with her for a couple hours tomorrow." "You talk to her for the first time in 10 years, and that's not a big deal? And you call her Mom?"
"What am I supposed to call her?"
"You're not." Kath turned almost completely to face the back seat, straining against the seatbelt. "You're not supposed to call her." She felt her dad's hand on her knee.
"Kath."
"No," Kath said. "Not you too. Not after everything."
"She's your mother," he said.
"That's a technicality," Kath said. "Why is she even bothering us?"
"She wants to get to know us," Wren answered.
"Well, that's bloody convenient, now that we don't need her anymore."
"Bloody?" Wren said.
"Watch her there, Kath. You're slipping into snow speak."
Kath felt tears on her cheeks. "Why do you keep doing that?"
"What?"
"Making little comments about Simon and Baz."
"I wasn't."
"You were," Kath said. "You are."
"Whatever."
"She left us. She didn't love us."
"It isn't that simple," Wren said.
watching the buildings go by.
It is for me.
Kath turned back around in her seat and folded her arms. Her dad's face was red, and he was tap-tap-tapping on the steering wheel. When they got home, Kath didn't want to be the one to go upstairs. She knew that if she went upstairs, she'd just feel trapped and miserable, and like the crazy one, like the little kid who'd been sent to her room. Instead, she went to the kitchen. She stood next to the counter and looked out into the backyard. Their dad still hadn't taken down their swing set. She wished he would. It was a death trap now, and the neighbor kids liked to sneak into the yard and play on it.
I thought you guys were talking about all this.
He was standing behind her. Kath shrugged. He put his hand on her shoulder, but she didn't turn around.
Ren's right, he said. It isn't that simple.
Stop, Kath said. Just stop, okay? I can't believe you're taking her side.
I'm on both your sides.
I don't mean Ren's side. Kath whipped around. She felt a new wave of tears. Hers. Her side. She left you.
We weren't good together, Kath.
Is that why she left us, too? Because we weren't good together?
She needed some time. She couldn't handle being a parent.
And you could? Kath saw the hurt in his eyes and shook her head. I didn't mean it that way, Dad. He took a deep breath.
Look, he said, to be honest, I don't love this either. It would be so much easier for me if I never had to think about Laura ever again. But she's your mother.
Everybody needs to stop saying that. Kath turned back to the window. You don't get to be the mother if you show up after the kids are already grown up. She's like all those animals who show up at the end of the story to eat the little red hen's bread. Back when we needed her, she wouldn't even return our phone calls. When we started our periods, we had to Google the details. But now, after we've stopped missing her, after we've stopped crying for her, after we've got shit figured out, now she wants to get to know us? I don't need a mother now, thanks, I'm good. Her dad laughed. She glanced over her shoulder at him. Why are you laughing?
I don't know, he said. The bread thing, I think. Also, did you really Google your period? You could have asked me about that. I know about periods.
Kath exhaled. It's okay. We Googled everything back then.
You don't have to talk to her, he said softly. Nobody's going to make you.
Yeah, but Ren has already. She's already let down the drawbridge.
Ren must have some shit she still needs to figure out.
Kath clenched her fists and pushed them into her eyes. I just don't like this. I don't like thinking about her. I don't want to see her. I don't want her in this house, thinking about how it used to be her house, about how we used to be hers too. I don't want her brain touching us. Her dad pulled Kath into his arms.
I know.
I feel like everything's upside down. He took another deep breath.
Me too.
Did you freak out when she called?
I cried for 3 hours.
Oh, Dad.
Your grandmother gave her my cell phone number.
Have you seen her?
No.
Kath shuddered, and her dad squeezed her tight. When I think about her coming here, she said, it's like that scene in Fellowship of the Ring when the hobbits are hiding from the Nazgul.
Your mother isn't evil, Kath.
That's just how I feel. He was quiet for a few seconds.
Me too.
Ren didn't get back in time for Thanksgiving dinner. She ended up staying the night. I feel like if we set the table and pretend everything's normal, Kath said to her dad, it's just going to be worse.
Agreed, he said.
They ate in the living room, turkey and mashed potatoes, and watched the History Channel. The green bean casserole sat in the kitchen and got cold because Ren was the only person who ever ate it.
Baz, have you ever done this before? Simon. Yes. No. Yes or no? Yes. Not like this. Baz. Not with a boy. Simon. Not when I really wanted it. From Shelley, posted April 2010, by fanfics.net author Magicath.
Chapter 15. When Kath saw it was Levi standing outside the door, she was so happy to see his always friendly face, she just let him in. She didn't even bother telling him that Reagan wasn't there.
Is Reagan here? He asked as soon as he was in the room.
Levi's face wasn't friendly. His forehead was furrowed, and his little bow lips were drawn tight. No, Kath said. She went out hours ago. She didn't add, with a giant guy named Chance who plays lots of intramural football and looks like he could play John Henry in the movie version of John Henry. Fuck, Levi said, leaning back against the door. Even angry, he was a leaner. What's wrong? Kath asked. Was he finally jealous? Didn't he know about the other guys? Kath always figured he and Reagan had an arrangement.
She was supposed to study with me, he said.
Oh, Kath said, not understanding. Well, you can still study here, if you want.
No.
Angry.
I need her help. We were supposed to study last night, and she put me off, and the test is tomorrow, and...
He hurled a book down on Reagan's bed, then sat at the end of Kath's, looking away from her but still hiding his face.
She said she'd study with me.
Kath walked over and picked up the book. The Outsiders?
Yeah.
He looked up.
Have you read it?
No. Have you?
No.
So read it, she said. Your test is tomorrow? You have time. It doesn't look very long. Levi shook his head and looked at the floor again.
You don't understand. I have to pass this test.
So read the book. Were you just going to let Reagan read it for you? He shook his head again, not in answer, more like he was shaking his head at the very idea of reading the book.
I told you, he said. I'm not much of a book person.
Levi always said that. I'm not a book person. Like books were rich desserts or scary movies. Yeah, but this is school, she said. Would you let Reagan take the test for you?
Maybe, he huffed, if that was an option.
Kath dropped the book next to him on her bed and went to her desk. You may as well watch the movie, she said, distastefully.
It's not available.
Kath made a noise like, huh, in her throat.
You don't understand, Levi said. If I don't get a C in this class, I get kicked out of my program.
So read the book.
It's not that simple.
It's exactly that simple, Kath said. You have a test tomorrow. Your girlfriend isn't here to do your work. Read the book.
You don't understand anything.
Levi was standing now. He'd walked to the door, but Kath wouldn't turn to face him. She was tired of fighting. This fight wasn't even hers. Okay, she said. I don't understand. Whatever. Reagan isn't here, and I have a ton of reading to do, and nobody to do it for me, so... She heard him jerk open the door.
I tried to read it, he said roughly. I've been trying for the last 2 hours. I'm not a reader. I've never finished a book.
Kath turned to look at him, feeling a sudden guilty grab in her stomach. Are you trying to tell me you can't read? Levi pushed his hair back violently.
Of course I can read, he said. Jesus Christ.
Well, then what are you trying to tell me? That you don't want to? No, I... He closed his eyes and took a deep breath through his nose.
I don't know why I'm trying to tell you anything. I can read. I just can't read books.
So pretend it's a really long street sign and muddle through it.
Jesus, he said, surprised, hurt. What have I ever done to make you be this mean to me?
I'm not being mean, Kath said, knowing that she probably was. I just don't know what you want me to say. That I approve? What you and Reagan do isn't any of my business.
You think I'm lazy.
His eyes were on the ground.
And I'm not.
Okay.
It's like I can't focus,
he said, turning away from her in the doorway.
Like I read the same paragraph over and over, and I still don't know what it says. Like the words go right through me and I can't hold on to them.
Okay, she said. He looked back, just far enough to face her. Levi's eyes were too big in his face when he wasn't smiling.
I'm not a cheater, he said.
Then he walked away, letting the door close behind him. Kath exhaled, then inhaled. Her chest was so tight it hurt both ways. Levi shouldn't get to make her feel this way. He shouldn't even have access to her chest. Levi wasn't her boyfriend. He wasn't family. She didn't choose him. She was stuck with him because she was stuck with Reagan. He was a roommate-in-law. The Outsiders was still sitting on her bed. Kath grabbed it and ran out the door. Levi? She ran down the hall. Levi! He was standing in front of the elevator, with his hands shoved into his coat pockets. Kath stopped running when she saw him. He turned to look at her. His eyes were still too big. You forgot your book. She held it up.
Thanks, he said, holding out his hand.
Kath ignored it. Look, why don't you come back? Reagan's probably on her way.
I'm sorry I yelled at you, he said.
Did you yell at me?
I raised my voice.
She rolled her eyes and took a step backwards toward her room. Come on. Levi looked in her eyes, and she let him.
Are you sure?
Come on. Kath turned toward her room and waited for him to fall into step beside her. I'm sorry, she said softly. I didn't realize we were having a serious conversation until we were.
I'm just really stressed about this test, he said.
They stopped at her door, and Kath suddenly brought her wrists up to her temples. Crap! She held her hands on top of her head. Crap, crap, crap! We're locked out! I don't have my keys!
I got ya.
Levi grinned and pulled out his key ring. Her jaw dropped. You have a key to our room?
Reagan gave me her spare, for emergencies.
He unlocked the door and held it open for her. Then why are you always sitting in the hall?
That's never an emergency.
Kath walked in and Levi followed. He was smiling again, but he was still obviously operating at 30 degrees below regular Levi. They might be done fighting, but he was still going to fail his test. So you couldn't find the movie? She asked. Even online?
No, and the movie's no good anyway. Teachers can always tell when you watch the movie.
He flopped down at the head of her bed.
Normally, I listen to the audiobook.
That counts as reading, Kath said, sitting at her desk.
It does?
Of course. He kicked one of the legs of her chair playfully, then rested his feet there on the rail.
Well, then never mind. I guess I have read lots of books. This one wasn't available.
He unzipped his jacket, and it fell open. He was wearing a green and yellow plaid shirt underneath. So what, was Reagan going to read it to you?
Usually we just go over the highlights. It helps her, too, to review it.
Kath looked down at the paperback. Well, I've got nothing for you,
All I know about the outsiders is stay gold, pony boy.
Levi sighed and pushed back his hair. Kath shuffled the pages with her thumb. It really was a short book, with tons of dialogue. She looked up at Levi. The sun was setting behind her, and he was sitting in a wash of orange light. Kath turned her chair toward the bed, knocking his feet without warning to the ground. Then she rested her own feet on the bed frame and took off her glasses, tucking them in her hair.
When I stepped out into the bright sunlight from the darkness of the movie house,
Kath,
Levi whispered. She felt her chair wobble and knew he was kicking it.
You don't have to do that.
Obviously, she said. When I stepped out into the bright sunlight,
Cather.
She cleared her throat, still focused on the book. Shut up, I owe you one. At least one. And also, I'm trying to read here. When I stepped out into the bright sunlight from the darkness of the movie house, I had just two things on my mind. When Kath glanced up between paragraphs, Levi was grinning. He bent forward to slide out of his coat, then found a new way to rest his legs on her chair and leaned back against the wall, closing his eyes. Kath had never read out loud this much before. Fortunately, it was a good book, so she sort of forgot after a while that she was reading out loud and that Levi was listening and the circumstances that got them here. An hour or so passed, maybe even two, before Kath dropped her hands and the book into her lap. The sun had finished setting, and the only light in her room was from her desk lamp.
You can stop whenever you want, Levi said.
I don't want to stop. She looked up at him. I'm just really... She was blushing. She wasn't sure why. Thirsty.
Levi laughed and sat up. Oh, yeah. Let me get you something. You want soda? Water? I could be back here in 10 with a gingerbread latte.
She was about to tell him not to bother, but then she remembered how good that gingerbread latte was.
Really? Back in 10, he said, already standing and putting on his jacket.
He stopped in the doorway, and Kath felt tense, remembering how sad he'd looked the last time he stood there. Levi smiled.
Kath didn't know what to do, so she sort of nodded and gave him the world's lamest thumbs up.
When he was gone, she stood up and stretched. Her back and her shoulders popped. She went to the bathroom, came back, stretched again, checked her phone, then lay down on her bed. It smelled like Levi, like coffee grounds and some sort of warm, spicy thing that might be cologne. Or soap. Or deodorant. Levi sat on her bed so often it was all familiar. Sometimes he smelled like cigarette smoke, but not tonight. Sometimes like beer. She'd left the door unlocked, so when he knocked again, Kath just sat up and told him to come in. She'd meant to get up and sit back down at her desk, but Levi was already handing her the drinks and taking off his coat. His face was flushed from the cold, and when his coat touched her, it was so cold she jumped.
5 below, he said, taking off his hat and rifling his hair until it stuck up again. Scoot over.
Kath did, scooting up toward her pillow and leaning against the wall. Levi took his drink and smiled at her. She set the drink carrier on her desk. He'd brought her a big glass of water, too. Can I ask you something? She looked down at her Starbucks cup.
Of course.
Why did you take a literature class if you can't finish a book? He turned to her. They were sitting shoulder to shoulder.
I need 6 hours of literature to graduate. That's 2 classes. I tried to get 1 out of the way freshman year, but I failed it. I failed a lot that year.
How do you get through any of your classes?
Kath had hours of assigned reading almost every single night. Coping strategies.
Such as?
I record my lectures and listen to them later. Professors usually cover most of what's on the test in class, and I find study groups.
And you lean on Reagan.
Not just Reagan. He grinned. I'm really good at quickly identifying the smartest girl in every class.
Kath frowned at him. God, Levi, that's so exploitive.
How is it exploitive? I don't make them wear miniskirts. I don't call them baby. I just say, hello, smart girl. Would you like to talk to me about Great Expectations?
They probably think you like them.
I do like them.
If it wasn't exploitive, you'd harass smart boys, too.
I do, in a pinch. Do you feel exploited, Cather?
He was still grinning at her over his coffee cup. No, she said.
I know that you don't like me.
You don't know anything.
So this is old hat for you? Finding a girl to read a whole book to you? He shook his head.
No, this is a first.
Well, now I feel exploited, she said, setting her drink down and reaching for the book.
Thank you, he said.
Chapter 12.
I'm serious.
Levi pulled the book down and looked at her.
Thank you.
Kath held his eyes for a few seconds. Then she nodded and pulled back the book. After another 50 pages, Kath was getting sleepy. At some point, Levi had leaned against her, and then she'd leaned back, and it was hard to think about what was happening on that side of her body because she was busy reading, though there was almost an entire chapter there where her lips and eyes were moving, but her brain wasn't keeping track of anything but how warm he was, how warm her roommate's boyfriend was. One of her roommate's boyfriends. Did that matter? If Reagan had three boyfriends, did that mean this was only one-third wrong? Just leaning against Levi probably wasn't wrong, but leaning against him because he was warm and not exactly soft, wrong. Kath's voice rasped, and he sat up away from her a little bit.
Want to take a break?
He asked. She nodded, only partly grateful. Levi stood up and stretched. The tails of his flannel shirt didn't quite lift up over the waist of his jeans. Kath stood up, too, and rubbed her eyes.
You're tired, he said. Let's stop.
We're not stopping now, she said. We're almost done.
We've still got 100 pages.
Are you getting bored?
No, I just feel like it's too much, what you're doing for me. Bordering on exploitive.
Pfft, Kath said. I'll be right back, and then we'll finish. We're half done, and I want to know what happens. Nobody said Stay Gold Pony Boy yet. When she came back, Levi was in the hallway, leaning against the door. He must have gone up to the boys' floor to use the bathroom. This is weird now that I know you have a key, she said. She let him in, and he dropped down onto the bed again and smiled at her. Kath glanced at her desk chair, then felt his hand on her sleeve. He pulled her down next to him on the bed, and their eyes met for a second. Kath looked away as if they hadn't.
Look what we sell at Starbucks, he said, holding an energy bar out to her.
Kath took it. Blueberry Bliss! Wow, this takes me back 2 whole months.
Months are different in college, Levi said, especially freshman year. Too much happens. Every freshman month equals 6 regular months. They're like dog months.
She unwrapped the protein bar and offered him half. He took it and tapped it against hers.
Cheers.
It was really late and too dark in the room to be reading this much. Kath's voice was rough now, like someone had run a dull knife across it. Like she was recovering from a cold or a crying jag. At some point, Levi had put his left arm around her and pulled her back against his chest. She'd been fidgeting and rubbing her back on the wall, and Levi just reached behind her and pulled her into him. Then his hand had fallen back down to the bed and stayed there, except for when he stretched or moved. When he moved, Levi would bring his hand up to Kath's shoulder to hold her against him while he adjusted. She could feel his chest rising when he breathed. She could feel his breath on her hair sometimes.
When he moved his chin, it bumped into the back of her head. The muscles in Kath's arms and her back and her neck were starting to ache just from being held so long at attention. She lost her place in the book and stopped reading for a moment. Levi's chin bumped into her head. "Take a break," he said in a voice that wasn't a whisper but was just as soft. She nodded, and he held her left elbow while he reached his right arm across her to get the glass of water. His body curved around her for a second, then settled back again against the wall. He kept his hand on her elbow. Kath took a drink, then set down the water. She tried not to squirm, but her back was stiff, and she arched it against him.
"You okay?"
he asked. She nodded again, and then she felt him slowly moving.
"Here."
Levi slid down the wall onto the bed, resting on his side, then tugged Kath down so she was lying on her back in front of him, his arm beneath her head like a pillow. She relaxed her shoulders and felt warm flannel against the back of her neck.
"Better?"
he asked in his superscript voice. He was looking at her face, giving Kath a chance to say no without having to say it out loud. She didn't speak or nod or answer. Instead, she looked down and shifted slightly toward him onto her side, leaning the book against his chest. She started reading again and felt Levi's elbow curve around her shoulder. Kath didn't have to read very loud when he was this close, which was good because her voice was almost gone. Gone. God, Levi was warm, and up close he smelled so much like himself. It made her tear up. Her eyes were tired. She was tired. When Johnny, one of the main characters, got hurt, Levi took a sharp breath. By that time, Kath's cheek was on his chest, and she could feel his ribs expanding. She took a deep breath, too. Her voice broke a little more, and Levi tightened his grip around her. She wondered whether there was any blood left in his arm. She wondered what happened when they got to the end of the story. She kept reading. There were too many boys in this book, too many arms and legs and flushed faces. She'd expected to laugh when she finally got to the line, "Stay gold, pony boy." But she didn't, because it meant that Johnny was dead, and she thought that maybe Levi was crying. Maybe Kath was crying, too. Her eyes were tired. She was tired. "When I stepped out into the bright sunlight from the darkness of the movie house, I had only two things on my mind: Paul Newman and a ride home." Kath closed the book and let it fall on Levi's chest, not sure what happened next. Not sure she was awake, all things considered. The moment it fell, he pulled her into him, onto him, with both arms. Her chest pressed against his, and the paperback slid between their stomachs. Kath's eyes were half closed, and so were Levi's, and his lips only looked small from afar, she realized, because of their doll-like pucker. They were perfectly big, really, now that she had a good look at them. Perfectly something. He nudged his nose against hers, and their mouths fell sleepily together, already soft and open. When Kath's eyes closed, her eyelids stuck. She wanted to open them. She wanted to get a better look at Levi's two dark eyebrows. She wanted to admire his crazy vampire hairline. She had a feeling this was never going to happen again, and that it might even ruin what was left of her life, so she wanted to open her eyes to bear some witness. But she was so tired, and his mouth was so soft, and nobody had ever kissed Kath like this before. Only Abel had kissed her before, and that was like getting pushed squarely on the mouth and pushing back. Levi's kisses were all taking, like he was drawing something out of her with soft little jabs of his chin. She brought her fingers up to his hair, and she couldn't open her eyes. Eventually, she couldn't stay awake.
I'm sorry, Penelope. Don't waste my time with sorries, Simon. If we stop to apologize and forgive each other every time we step on each other's toes, we'll never have time to be friends. From Chapter 4, Simon Snow and the Second Serpent, copyright 2003, by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 16. Kath didn't wake up when the door swung open, but she jumped when it slammed closed. That's when she felt Levi sprawled out beneath her, the warm scrape of his chin against her forehead. Then she woke up. Reagan was standing at the end of Kath's bed, staring at them. She was still wearing last night's jeans, and her silvery blue eyeshadow had drifted onto her cheeks. Kath sat up, and Levi sat up, groggily, and Kath felt her stomach barreling up into her throat. Levi reached for Kath's phone and looked at it. "Shit," he said. "I'm 2 hours late for work." He was up then and putting on his coat. "Fell asleep reading," he said, half to Reagan, half to the floor. "Reading," Reagan said, looking at Kath. "Later," Levi said, more to the floor than to either of them. And then he was gone, and Reagan was still standing at the end of Kath's bed. Kath's eyes were sticky and sore and suddenly full of tears. "I'm so sorry," she said, feeling it in her stomach and in every sore muscle between her shoulders. "Oh, my God." "Don't," Reagan said. She was obviously furious. I'm just so sorry." "Don't. Do not apologize." Kath crossed her legs and hunched over, holding her face. "But I knew he was your boyfriend." Kath was crying now, even though it would probably just make Reagan more angry. "He's not my boyfriend," Reagan said, very nearly shouting. "Not anymore. Not for a long time, actually, so just don't." Reagan inhaled loudly, then let it out. "I just didn't expect this to happen," she said. "And if it did happen, I didn't expect it to bother me. It's Levi. And Levi always likes me best." "He's not her boyfriend?" "He still likes you best," Kath said, trying not to whimper. "Don't be an idiot, Cather." Reagan's voice was serrated. "I mean, I know that you are about this, but try not to be an idiot right this moment." "I'm sorry," Kath said, trying and failing to look up at her roommate. "I still don't know why I did it. I swear I'm not that kind of girl." Reagan finally turned away. She dropped her bag on the bed and grabbed her towel. "What kind of girl is that, Kath? The girl kind? I'm gonna take a shower. When I come back, I'll be over this." And when she came back, she was. Kath had curled up on her bed and let herself cry like she hadn't all Thanksgiving weekend. She found the outsiders wedged between the bed and the wall and threw it on the floor. Reagan saw the book when she came back to the room. She was wearing yoga pants and a tight gray hoodie and square brown glasses instead of contacts. "Oh, fuck," she said, picking up the book. "I was supposed to help him study." She looked over at Kath. "Were you actually just reading?" "Not just," Kath said, her voice a hiccupy wheeze. "Stop crying," Reagan said. "I mean it." Kath closed her eyes and rolled toward the wall. Reagan sat at the end of her own bed. "He's not my boyfriend," she said solemnly. "And I knew he liked you. He was here constantly. I just didn't know that you liked him back." "I thought he was here constantly because he was your boyfriend," Kath said. "I didn't want to like him back. I tried to be mean to him."
"I thought you were just mean," Reagan said. "I liked that about you."
Kath laughed and rubbed her eyes for the 500th time in 12 hours. She felt like she had pink eye. "I'm over it," Reagan said. "I was just surprised."
You can't be over it, Kath said, sitting up and leaning against the wall. Even if I didn't kiss your boyfriend, I thought I was kissing your boyfriend. That's how I was going to repay you for all the nice things you've done for me?
Wow, Reagan said. When you put it that way, it is pretty fucked up.
Kath nodded miserably.
So why'd you do it?
Kath thought of Levi's warmth against her arm last night, and his 10,000 smiles, and his 40-acre forehead. She closed her eyes, then pressed the heels of her hands into them. I just really, really wanted to. Reagan sighed.
Okay, she said. Here's the deal. I'm hungry, and I have to finish reading The Outsiders. Levi likes you, you like him, I'm over it. It could get weird around here real fast if you start dating my high school boyfriend, but there's no turning back, you know?
Kath didn't answer. Reagan kept talking.
If he were still my boyfriend, we'd have to throw down, but he's not. So let's go have lunch, okay?
Kath looked up at Reagan and nodded her head. Kath had already missed her morning classes, including fiction writing. She thought about Nick, and right at that moment, it was like thinking about almost anybody. Reagan was eating a bowl of Lucky Charms.
Okay,
she said, stabbing her spoon at Kath. Now what?
Now what? Kath said, her mouth full of grilled cheese. Now what with Levi?
Kath swallowed.
Nothing. I don't know. Do I have to know what? Do you want my help with this?
Kath looked at Reagan. Even without her makeup and hair, the girl was terrifying. There was just no fear in her, no hesitation. Talking to Reagan was like standing in front of an oncoming train.
I don't know what this is, Kath said. She clenched her fists in her lap and forced herself to keep talking. I feel like what happened last night was just an aberration, like it could only have happened in the middle of the night when he and I were both really tired, because if it had been daylight, we would have seen how inappropriate it was.
I already told you, Reagan said. He's not my boyfriend.
It's not just that.
Kath turned her face toward the wall of windows, then back at Reagan earnestly. It was one thing when I had a crush on him and he was totally unattainable, but I don't think I could actually be with someone like Levi. It would be like interspecies dating.
Reagan let her spoon drop sloppily into her cereal. What's wrong with Levi?
Nothing, Kath said. He's just not like me.
You mean smart?
Levi's really smart, Kath said defensively.
I know, Reagan said, just as defensively.
He's different, Kath said. He's older. He smokes, and he drinks, and he's probably had sex. I mean, he looks like he has.
Reagan raised her eyebrows like Kath was talking crazy, and Kath thought, not for the first time, but for the first time since last night, that Levi had probably had sex with Reagan.
And he likes to be outside, Kath said, just to change the subject. And he likes animals. We don't have anything in common.
You're making him sound like he's some rowdy mountain man who, like, smokes cigars and has sex with prostitutes. Kath laughed, despite herself. Like a dangerous French fur trapper.
He's just a guy, Reagan said.
Of course he's different from you. You're never going to find a guy who's exactly like you. First of all, because that guy never leaves his dorm room.
Guys like Levi don't date girls like me.
Again, the girl kind?
Guys like Levi date girls like you.
And what does that mean? Reagan asked, tilting her head.
Normal, Kath said. Pretty.
Reagan rolled her eyes.
No, Kath said. Seriously, look at you. You've got your shit together. You're not scared of anything. I'm scared of everything. And I'm crazy.
Like, maybe you think I'm a little crazy, but I only ever let people see the tip of my crazy iceberg. Underneath this veneer of slightly crazy and moderately socially inept, I'm a complete disaster. Reagan rolled her eyes again. Kath made a mental note to stop rolling her eyes at people. What would we do together? Kath asked. He'd want to go to the bar, and I'd want to stay home and write fan fiction.
I'm not going to talk you into this, Reagan said, especially if you're going to be stupid. But I will say this, you're being stupid. He already likes you. He even liked your creepy fan fiction. He won't stop talking about it. Levi's just a guy. A really, really good, maybe even the best guy. And nobody's saying you have to marry him, so stop making everything so hard, Kath. You kissed him, right? The only question is, do you want to kiss him again?
Kath clenched her fists until her fingernails bit into her palms. Reagan started stacking the empty dishes on her tray. Why did you break up? Kath blurted.
I kept cheating on him, Reagan said flatly. I'm a pretty good friend, but I'm a shitty girlfriend.
Kath picked up her tray and followed Reagan to the trash. She didn't see Levi that night. He worked Wednesday nights. That's when Kath realized that she knew Levi's work schedule. But he texted her about a party Thursday at his house.
Party? Thursday? My house?
Kath didn't text him back. She tried to. She kept starting messages and deleting them. She almost sent back just a smiley face emoticon. Reagan got home from work late that night and went straight to bed. Kath was at her desk, writing.
Levi killed our outsiders quiz, Reagan said, stifling a yawn.
Kath smiled down at her laptop. Did you talk about me?
No, I didn't think you'd want me to. I told you, I'm a pretty good friend.
Yeah, but you're more Levi's friend than mine.
Bros before hoes, Reagan said.
Before she left the room the next morning, Reagan asked Kath if she wanted to go to Levi's party. I don't think so, Kath said. I have class Friday morning at 8:30.
Who registers for a class that meets Friday morning at 8:30?
Kath shrugged. She didn't want to go to Levi's party. Even though she liked him, she didn't like parties, and she didn't want the first time she saw him after what had happened to be at a party with party people. With any people. Kath was pretty sure she was the only person in Pound Hall tonight. She tried to tell herself that it was kind of cool to have a 12-story building to herself, like being trapped in the library overnight. This is why I can't be with Levi, because I'm the kind of girl who fantasizes about being trapped in a library overnight, and Levi can't even read. Kath immediately felt bad for thinking that. Levi could read, sort of. She'd always thought that either people could read or they couldn't, not this in-between thing that Levi had, where his brain could catch the words but couldn't hold on to them, like reading was one of those rip-off claw games they had at the bowling alley. But Levi clearly wasn't dumb. He remembered everything. He could quote extensively from the Simon Snow movies, and he knew everything there was to know about bison and piping plovers. And why was she even arguing this point with herself? It's not like she was going to send Abel Levi's ACT scores. She should have texted him back. Levi, not Abel. But that would have been engaging in this situation, like moving a chess piece, or kicking off from the ground on a teeter-totter. Better to leave Levi up in the air for a day or two than to end up stuck there by herself. The fact that she was thinking about whatever this was in terms of playground equipment showed that she wasn't ready for it. For him, Levi was an adult. He had a truck and facial hair, and he'd slept with Reagan. She'd practically admitted it. Kath didn't want to look at a guy and picture the people he'd slept with. Which had never been an issue with Abel. Nothing was ever an issue with Abel, because, she could hear Ren screaming, you didn't like him. Kath liked Levi,
A lot. She liked looking at him. She liked listening to him, though sometimes she hated listening to him talk to other people. She hated the way he passed out smiles to everyone he met like it didn't cost him anything, like he'd never run out. He made everything look so easy. Even standing. You didn't realize how much work everyone else put into holding themselves upright until you saw Levi leaning against a wall. He looked like he was leaning on something even when he wasn't. He made standing look like vertical lying down. Thinking about Levi's lazy hips and loose shoulders just dragged Kath's memory back to her bed. She'd spent the night with a boy, slept with him. And never mind that that's all they'd done, because it was still a huge deal. She wished she could talk to Ren about this. Fuck Ren. No. Damn her. Never mind her. All Ren did lately was complicate Kath's world. Kath had slept with a boy. With a guy. And it was awesome. Warm and tangly. What would have happened if they'd woken up any other way? Without Reagan barging in, would Levi have kissed her again? Or would he still have rushed off with nothing more than a later? Later. Kath stared at her laptop. She'd been working on the same paragraph for 2 hours. It was a love scene, a pretty mild one, and she kept losing track of where Baz and Simon's hands were supposed to be. It was confusing sometimes with all the he's and the hims, and she'd been staring at this paragraph for so long she was starting to feel like she'd written every sentence before. Maybe she had. She shut the laptop and stood up. It was almost 10 o'clock. What time did parties end? What time did they start? Not that it mattered at this point. Kath didn't have any way to get to Levi's house. She walked over and stood in front of the full-length mirror that was mounted on their door. Kath looked like exactly who she was, an 18-year-old nerd who knew F-all about boys or parties. Skinny jeans, unskinny hips, a faded pink t-shirt that said, "The magic word is please," a pink and brown argyle cardigan. Her hair was pulled up into a floppy half-bun on top of her head. Kath pulled the rubber band out of her hair and took off her glasses. She had to step closer to the mirror to see herself clearly. She lifted her chin up and forced her forehead to relax. "I'm the cool one," she told herself. "Somebody give me some tequila because I'll totally drink it, and there's no way you're going to find me later having a panic attack in your parents' bathroom. Who wants to French kiss?" This is why she couldn't be with Levi. She still called it French kissing, and he just went around putting his tongue in people's mouths. Kath still didn't look like the cool one. She didn't look like Ren. She pushed her shoulders back, let her chest stick out. There was nothing wrong with her breasts, that she knew of. They were big enough that nobody ever called her flat-chested. She wished they were a little bigger. Then they'd balance out her hips. Then Kath wouldn't have to check pear-shaped on those how-to-dress-for-your-body-type guides. Those guides try to convince you that it's okay to be any shape, but when your body type is a synonym for foobar, it's hard to believe it. Kath pretended she was Ren. She pretended she didn't care. She pushed her shoulders back and lifted her chin and told her eyes to say, "Have you met me yet? I'm the pretty one, too." The door flew open, and the doorknob caught Kath in the ribs. "Shit," she said, falling halfway onto her bed, halfway onto the floor. Her arms were over her head. She'd managed to protect her face. "Shit," Reagan said. She was standing over Kath. "Are you okay?" Kath brought a hand to her side and finished sliding onto the floor. "Jesus," she moaned. "Kath? Shit." Kath sat up slowly. Nothing seemed broken. "Why were you standing right in front of the door?" Reagan demanded. "Maybe I was on my way out," Kath said. "Jesus,
Why do you have to kick the door open every single time you come home?
My hands are always full. Reagan set down her backpack and her duffel bag and offered Kath a hand. Kath ignored it and pulled herself up using the bed.
If you know I always kick the door open, Reagan said, you should know not to stand there.
I thought you were at the party. Kath put her glasses back on. Is this how you say you're sorry?
Sorry, Reagan said, like it cost her all her tips. I had to work. I'm going to the party now.
Oh. Reagan kicked one of her shoes into her closet.
Are you coming with?
She didn't look at Kath. If she had, Kath might have said something other than what she did.
Sure.
Reagan stopped mid-kick and looked up.
Oh? Okay. Well, I'm just going to change.
Okay, Kath said.
All right.
Reagan grabbed her toothbrush and makeup bag and glanced back at Kath, smiling in approval. Kath looked at the ceiling. Just change. As soon as Reagan left, Kath jumped up, wincing and feeling her side again, and opened her closet. Baz glared at her from the backside of her closet door. Don't just stand there, she mumbled to the cutout. Help me. When she and Ren divided up their clothes, Ren had taken anything that said party at a boy's place or leaving the house. Kath had taken everything that said up all night writing or it's okay to spill tea on this. She had accidentally grabbed a pair of Ren's jeans at Thanksgiving, so she put those on. She found a white t-shirt that didn't have anything on it, anything Simon anyway. There was a weird stain she'd have to hide with a sweater. She dug out her least pilled-up black cardigan. Kath had makeup somewhere in one of her drawers. She found mascara, an eyeliner pencil, and a crusty-looking bottle of foundation, then went to stand in front of Reagan's makeup mirror. When Reagan came back, gently opening the door, her face looked fresh, and her red hair was flat and smooth. Reagan looked kind of like Adele, Kath thought. If Adele had a harder, somewhat sharper twin sister. Doppelganger.
Look at you, Reagan said. You look slightly nicer than usual.
Kath groaned, feeling too helpless to snark back. Reagan laughed.
You look fine. Your hair looks good. It's like Kristen Stewart's when she's got extensions. Shake it out.
Kath shook her head like she was emphatically disagreeing with something. Reagan sighed and took Kath's shoulders, pulling her head down and shaking her hair out at the roots. Kath's glasses fell off.
If you're not going to blow it out, Reagan said, you may as well look like you've just been fucked.
Jesus, Kath said, pulling her head back. Don't be gross. She bent over to pick up her glasses.
Do you need those? Reagan asked.
Yes, Kath put them on. I need them to keep me from becoming the girl and She's All That.
It doesn't matter, Reagan said. He already likes you. I think he's into the nerdy schoolgirl thing. He talks about you like you're something he found in a natural history museum.
This confirmed everything Kath had ever feared about Levi wanting to buy a ticket to her freak show. That's not a good thing, she said.
It is if it's Levi, Reagan said. He loves that stuff.
When he gets really sad, he likes to walk around Morrill Hall. That was the museum on campus. There were wildlife dioramas and the world's largest mammoth fossil.
He does?
God, that's cute.
Reagan rolled her eyes. Come on.
It was almost 11 when they got to Levi's house, but not exactly dark because of all the snow. Will anybody still be here? Kath asked Reagan when they got out of the car.
Levi will still be here. He lives here.
The house was exactly as Kath had imagined it. It was in an old neighborhood with big, white Victorian houses. Every house had a huge porch and way too many mailboxes next to the door. Parking was ridiculous.
They had to park 4 blocks away, and Kath was glad she wasn't wearing pointy, high-heeled boots like Reagan's. By the time they got to the door, Kath's stomach had realized what was happening. It twisted painfully, and she could feel her breath coming and going too soon. She couldn't believe she was doing this. Boy, party, strangers, beer, strangers, party, boy, eye contact. Reagan glanced over at her. "Don't be a spaz," she said sternly. Kath nodded, looking down at the worn, smooth welcome mat.
"I'm not going to abandon you in there," Reagan said, "even if I want to."
Kath nodded again, and Reagan opened the door. It was immediately warmer and brighter inside.